ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। त एकदा तुडाबसा पुरंजना पुरीं लिपा रुदुदु भाम भोगाज्या जदत पनग भालिता।
Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Once the dangerous soldiers attacked the city of Puranjana with great force. Although the city was full of paraphernalia for sense gratification, it was being protected by the old serpent. Purport by His Divine Grace. As one's body engages in sense gratification, it becomes weaker and weaker daily. Finally, the vital force becomes so weak that it is herein compared to a weak serpent. The life air has already been compared to the serpent. When the vital force within the body becomes weak, the body itself also becomes weak. At such a time, the death symptoms, that is, the dangerous soldiers of death's superintendent, Yamaraj, begin to attack very severely. According to the Vedic system, before coming to such a stage, one should leave home and take sannyas to preach the message of God for the duration of life. However, if one sits at home and is served by his beloved wife and children, he certainly becomes weaker and weaker due to sense gratification. When death finally comes, one leaves the body devoid of spiritual assets. At the present time, even the oldest man in the family does not leave home, being attracted by wife, children, money, opulence, dwelling, and so on. Thus, at the end of life, one worries about how his wife will be protected and how she will manage the great family responsibilities. In this way, a man usually thinks of his wife before death. According to Bhagavad Gita 8.6, yam yam bhapi smaran bhavam tejajante kalevaram tam tame vaiti konteya siddhatad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state one being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. At the end of life, a person thinks of what he has done throughout his whole life. Thus he gets another body, dihantara, according to his thoughts and desires at the end of life. One overly addicted to life at home naturally thinks of his beloved wife at the end of life. Consequently, in the next life, he gets the body of a woman, and he also acquires the results of his pious or impious activities. In this chapter, the acceptance of a woman's body by King Puranjana will be thoroughly explained. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Te ekada turabasa Puranjana purim nripa Rududur bhauma bhogadyam jadat panakapalitam. Once the dangerous soldiers attacked the city of Puranjana with great force. Although the city was full of paraphernalia for sense gratification, it was being protected by the old serpent. Hare Krishna. So Narada Muni is coming to the conclusion of his epic anagorical story, which in great detail, graphic detail, describes material existence. In the next chapter, he will explain to King Pratityabharishchat exactly what all these analogies mean specifically. The point being that the king is sensual. It's natural for a king to be sensual or to have all the facilities for sensual enjoyment. And if one doesn't have a spiritual conception of life, if one is living in a materially based culture or a materially based circumstance, then the tendency to forget the goal of life is extremely strong. Narada Muni is pointing out that human life is actually meant for something else than gratifying the senses. Even though the senses are very powerful, and the sense objects are very attractive, and of all the sense objects in the material world, the female human form is the most attractive. It is the sum total of all the attractive features of the material existence. Therefore, the term is used, stri, to describe the human female, because she performs the role in material existence of expanding material comforts. In the spiritual atmosphere, everything is just the opposite. In the Gita, Krishna describes the material world to be a reflection of the spiritual world, where everything is upside down in the material world. The tree reflected on the body of water shows its branches in the top of the tree down, and the bottom of the tree, the roots up, upward. Krishna suggests or instructs Arjuna that he must find the root of that tree, even though it's extremely difficult to find. We are all pleasure seekers, anandamayo vyasat. It is our nature to seek pleasure. In the material world, we seek the pleasure of our senses. And in the spiritual world, we seek the pleasure of Krishna's senses exclusively. And material life, human life in particular, is meant for us to come out of that misconception, the bodily misconception, in which we think our pleasure is derived through the gross material senses, sense pleasure, typified and in its most intense form, sex life. The material nature has arranged that the male is attracted to the female and the female is naturally attracted to the male. And when we leave our bodies, whatever we're thinking of, the subtle body carries us to the next body. So the males who are too attached to females have a tendency to take female bodies, and the males that are too attached, and the females who are too attached to males have a tendency to take male bodies. And this has been going on for a very, very, very long time. And now it is such that, Prabhupada explained this, the subtle body, after doing this for many, many lives, becomes confused. Can't remember. And even when it first comes out, it can't remember whether it's a male or a female. And now we see this phenomenon growing all over the earth. It's like, campaign crusades to pass laws that allow same-sex marriage. Because the soul is bewildered by material existence, by the material nature. It's bewildered. So by the vehicle of these, if this analogy of the body and all the different elements of the body and the sense objects, and now it's come to the point where the life air, which was the snake that is residing within the body, that protects the body, that means the life air means the consciousness. As long as the consciousness is in the body, then the body can move about and enjoy material sense gratification. But the result of this over a whole lifetime is that the senses become weak. The senses are replenished by the blood. The blood is replenished by what we eat. And if the blood is strong and it comes up to the brain through the semen, then the brain becomes strong and memory becomes strong. The life force becomes strong. And then at the time of death, it's easier for us to remember who we are. So, whether we're in a male or a female body, this is our dilemma. But the fact of the matter is that in a spiritually based culture, where spiritual knowledge is the foundation, from the beginning of life, in boyhood and girlhood, we're trained in spiritual knowledge and spiritual understanding. And then, when the inevitable attraction matures and we have to engage in sex and family life by the pushings and pullings of the vegans, we don't forget. The tendency to forget is extremely strong. And if we don't have spiritual training from the beginning, and if we don't cultivate that spiritual training and the spiritual knowledge all the way through life, and if we don't practice devotional service, then by the end, our senses are weak, the life air is weak from having lived in this body under these circumstances, and then we become attacked at the time of death. By what? Invalidity and old age. These are the soldiers of Yamaraj, described before. In the second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes that one should be bold enough. One should be bold enough not to succumb to these temptations, and to learn the art of fixing the mind and the heart on the Supreme Personality of Godhead in loving devotional service. And whatever distracts us from that, we should reject it. This is the beginning of the process of surrender. To reject those things that are causing our spiritual development to regress or digress, and to accept those things which cause our spiritual development to progress. Srila Prabhupada used to say almost comically that Krishna consciousness is so simple that we miss it. So now we're hearing about what it is that causes us to miss it. The tendency in material life and for conditioned souls who are very attached to material nature is to organize their lives in such a way as that they can always remember their wives and their husbands and their children, and they expand their possessions and their wealth and everything that facilitates that, to the point where at the end of life they're completely covered, like in a cocoon. They're in a cocoon, completely covered and forgetful of these spiritual truths. Pakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kartahamiti manyate. In this condition, the soul thinks himself the doer of activities which are actually being conducted by the material nature. Material nature conditions us into thinking that we're free when we can choose to do a particular thing or accept a particular thing or whatever. But these are actually the actions and reactions of material nature. And we must learn this. Therefore, the next verse, you remember the next verse? That's 327, Bhagavad Gita. The next verse, 328. Tatpavit tu mahabaho guna karma vibhagayo guna guneshu vartanta iti matva nasajjate. Tatpavit tu, knower of the truth. What does it mean to be knower of the truth? It means that one has become fortunate enough to hear from a source outside of that material labyrinth of actions and reactions which cause us to forget and react to situations, circumstances, personalities, in a way to bewilder us and force us to forget our spiritual nature and our real duty of life. What real pleasure is, what real love is. Tatvavit tu mahabahu guna karma vibhagayo guna guneshivartante. So real knowledge means to be able to see the difference between sense gratification and devotional service, and to choose devotional service. This is the freedom of the soul, and it's the only freedom the soul has in this material world. Everything else is arranged by the material nature. And because of the way material nature is organized, whatever we think about, whatever we engage in, whatever we absorb ourselves in, at the time of death, we naturally think of that thing or that person or that engagement or whatever. And therefore, Paranjana, who's a king, who's very attached to sensual activity, very attached to his queen, he will have to take the body of a woman in his next life and come back and do the whole thing again. So we should be bold enough and we should be intelligent enough now that we've come to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and are here in Vrindavan and engaging in devotional service in the company of the other Vaishnavas, to take this idea very seriously and not continue to cultivate material attraction while we're in this very fortunate position. Sometimes devotees who are maybe a little overly attached become attached to these verses and take them out of context and think that the scriptures are discriminating against women or against, you know, material things, and it's unfair, and I didn't have a choice, and I'm like this, and so many things. We rationalize so many things. But the truth is that in order to understand this topic properly and thoroughly and completely, we have to see the teachings in context. Krishna and the Vedas, the Veda comes from Krishna, the Vedas give prescriptions for all kinds of persons. The Vedas are completely inclusive. They're not exclusive under any circumstance. So in some parts of the Vedas, there will be things that attract a person who's very much addicted to ignorance or passion or goodness or whatever. So we shouldn't fall into the trap of taking one idea out of context and trying to apply it to everyone and everything in every circumstance. I once wrote an offering to Prabhupada, I don't remember what year it was, and I tried to analyze Prabhupada's surrender to Krishna and how it showed itself, displayed itself throughout his whole life. And I came to the conclusion that we as devotees would be better off not trying to compare ourselves to Prabhupada and compare each other to Prabhupada to determine whether we're doing okay or not in whatever ashram we're in by the measure of, you know, transcendental Mahabhagavat, more than 80-year-old Paramahansa Sannyasi. You know? Prabhu, you're in Maya because, you know, you did this or you did that or whatever. So we have to do our duties in life, even if we are married, even if we are, whether we're men or women or whatever we are, we have to do the duties that we've been prescribed by the laws of nature as long as we're still attached to the body. We can only neglect those things when we become elevated to the point where we can see a little beyond the body and we can see a little beyond the material nature. Until then, we should be very careful to follow the Dharma that we've acquired by the particular body we have and the circumstances we're in, the responsibilities we have, and we should carry them out carefully according to the rules and regulations as far as possible. In Kali Yuga, it's impossible to follow them all to the max. But as far as possible, we should follow. Not that we should neglect the duty, run off from our wife, and go to a holy place and get three other women. And don't think that's not happening. It's happening everywhere. So this requires cooperation. Requires cooperation between the beautiful sex, the women, and the powerful sex, the men. It requires cooperation. We should play our roles nicely with the idea that it's not so important. The material things are not so important. The most important thing is for us to be able to awaken our love for Krishna. I was speaking about Priya Bhagavatamrita the other day, and I mentioned that when Narada Muni in the first part was taking the survey to find out which devotee or devotees have received the most mercy of Krishna, he was advised by one devotee after another to go to a higher devotee, because no devotee will agree that they're the best devotee. And the higher they get, the more adamant they are that they're not the highest devotee. So how are you going to tell Prabhu, you're not an Uttamadikari? How can you possibly accept the role of guru? You know, person in that circumstance, they don't think themselves, you know, anything qualified. So how, they're going to then think, oh, now I can be a guru because now I'm elevated. Now I'm advanced. It's just the opposite. So anyway, Narada Muni was, you know, taking this survey, and he was sent to the Yadus by the Pandavas. Because the Pandavas said, yeah, you're saying that we're so advanced and dear to Krishna, and he became our, you know, order carrier and practically like a family member. Well, where is he now? You know, we were in trouble, you know, a big battle, and now he went back to Dwarka. He's not here. If we're so, you know, dear, then why isn't he here? No, you should go to Dwarka where the Yadus are, because the Yadus are his family members. And, you know, he's more attached to them. So anyway, Narada became enthusiastic and he went to Dwarka. And he approached the Sudharma Assembly Hall, big hall, I don't know how big, but very big. And from a distance he saw the Yadavas leaders sitting in a kind of semicircle according to age, junior to senior. And in the middle there was a seat, empty, waiting for Krishna to come and lead them in the affairs of state. And from a distance, Narada was almost blinded by the effulgence coming from the bodies of these personalities. So effulgent that the gold and jewels and different ornaments that were decorating the bodies were decorated by their bodies themselves, rather than the opposite way around. And then in the commentary, Sanatana Goswami makes this very sweet and very profound statement. He describes what that effulgence actually is. He said, this effulgence that comes from the body of the Yadus is the love they have for Krishna and the love they have for one another. So in the spiritual world, we can have love for one another, really, without the material complexities of, you know, the battle of the sexes and all these things that go on, you know, Venus and Mars and all these different speculations about why it is that, you know, we seem to be different species of life and we're trying to get it together and we're trying to get together, but it just doesn't seem to ever work out. It never does. But everyone's thinking, oh yes, it will this time. This was the question that Dharmaraj gave to Yudhishthir, you know, that he answered properly, that allowed Yamaraj to save his brothers who had died. Anyway, that's a long story. I won't get into it. I don't have time. But the question was, the main question was, what is the most wonderful thing in the world? That's a big question. Nice question. Great question. And he had to answer it properly, otherwise his brothers would die. Or they already died, but they wouldn't be able to come back to life. So his answer was, the most wonderful thing in the world is that we have experience of seeing every single person before us having died, and we're thinking we're not going to die. This is the power of Krishna's material energy. And don't think that we can overcome it by our own strength. We can only overcome it if Krishna chooses us and gives us that strength. And what is he? How does he decide? He decides by who is most attached to him. This is his nature. Yayatam mam prapadyante tangs tathaiva vijamyaham mama vakmana vartante manushak parta sarvasha. Who is most attached to him? The person who is most attached to him gives up taking anything in return for their loving service to Him. Such a person becomes free from this snake, that's the serpent that is becoming so weak and is now going to devour Paranjana and force him into another body, another term of material existence, to struggle, suffer and enjoy. Krishna consciousness is so simple, we forget it. Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna in all our activities. Arjuna was a warrior. He wasn't a sannyasi. He didn't go away to the forest. At the end he did. And although Krishna told him, now think of me all the time, tasmat sarvishu kaleshu mam anusmara yujicha. Yujicha means that was his duty to fight. He was a warrior. His duty was to fight. Our duty may be something else, but we're supposed to do that duty and at the same time remember Krishna. We do that by having a sense that what we're doing is for Krishna. That requires constant practice, constant detachment. So this is the great gift Prabhupada has given us. He's given us a lifestyle. He's given us devotional service that will engage us in all the different features of life in the material world, all the activities that we perform in the world. We can engage them all in Krishna's service, in loving service, and purify our mind and our senses and our everything. And then we will remember Krishna at the time of death, because it will be natural for us. So we should do our duties. But we should do our duties, as Krishna says again and again and again in the Gita itself, without attachment to the results. Now this is a little difficult concept to understand. But he said, a proper grihastha will act as if he is a henpecked husband. Just look at Krishna. You know, Satyabhama wanted that Parijata tree. So he said, yes dear. And boom, they went all the way to the heavenly planets, and he even fought, you know, Indra for it. Acting like a henpecked husband. So we have to act properly to protect one another and to serve one another. But at the same time, Prabhupada said, internally we have to develop detachment to the point where we don't care this much. But the person we're involved with shouldn't know that, because we should act in such a way as that they think we're more attached to them than anything else. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness. To do our duties in such a way as everyone around us becomes satisfied. This is described in the beginning of the Gita. Yoga yukto vishudatma bijitatma jitendriya sarva bhutatma bhutatma. If we do our duties, yoga yukto, our service in Krishna consciousness, vishudatma, with a pure heart, without attachment for the results for ourselves, but to please others, then what happens? Sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvanapalipi. We become dear to everyone and everyone becomes dear to us. This is the test. If we're always going around getting in fights with everybody about this controversial issue or that controversial issue or this position or that position or this or that, then we'll end up the same as all the other materialists end up here, like Paranjana. On his deathbed, ready to take a body of a woman, or if you're a woman, ready to take a body of a man and do the whole thing again. So, in the third chapter, Krishna says, Shakta Karmanya Vidbanto Yata Kurvanti Bharata Kurya Vinbantata Shaktas Chikirshu Lokasankraham. And here is the key. A person who is attached, shakta karma nivedbangso, to the modes of nature and everything, may act in one way. And a person who's detached may act in the same way, but for a different reason. And what is that reason? Chakirshu lokasangraham. For the benefit of others. Chikirchu Lukasangham means for the satisfaction of others. In the fifth chapter, he confirms this, reconfirms it. Labante Brahmanirvanam Rishiya China Kalmasha China Dvaida Yatatmana Sarva Bhuta Hite Rataha. These are the symptoms of a person who's actually liberated, who's actually in devotional service. Labhante Brahmanirvanam, one who has achieved. Labhante means to achieve. Liberation. Labhante Brahmanirvam Rishiyat China Kamasha. By his wisdom, he becomes free from Chakalmasha, from contaminating thoughts and contaminating activities. China Dvaidayatatmana. This cuts off the sense of duality. We're living in duality. The Lord and His world are absolute. Free from duality, we can do our service and keep our mind engaged in Krishna, even when these different things are happening to us. What it means is not that the dualities go away, but we are no longer involved in them. It no longer affects us in the same way. And then, with all of that wisdom and detachment, what do we do? Sarva-bhuta-abhuta. What's the last line? Chinadvaisa. Sarva-bhuta-hite-rataha. We act for the benefit of others. This is the secret, Krishna consciousness. It is the Sankirtan movement. To act for the benefit of others. To work in such a way that everyone can become happy. That is the Sankirtan movement. To sacrifice. And in this spirit of sacrifice is nectar. The real nectar of life. Karma brahmod bhavam vidhi pramakshara samudbhavam tasmat savakatam brahma nityam jagye pratishtitam. The sacrifice, the knowledge comes from the Vedas. Vedas come from Krishna. The process of sacrifice are enunciated in the Vedas. So therefore, Krishna concludes, in the spirit of sacrifice, the Supreme Lord is situated. And therefore, there's nectar when we sacrifice instead of doing what we want to do, when we do what our spiritual master wants us to do, what Krishna wants us to do, what our subordinates want us to do, what our superiors want us to do. Sarve pyete jagyavido jagya chaptikal mashaha jagya shisht amrita bujo jagya shisht amrita bujo. Amrita means nectar. When we sacrifice for others, for their pleasure, whatever it may be, there's a taste that comes that's higher than selfish interests and selfish taste. And this is the springboard. And when we apply that principle to the spirit of sacrifice for Krishna and the spiritual master and the deities and the Vaishnavas in the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we taste real nectar. With that taste, we can resist the temptation of material sense gratification, and only by that taste. Otherwise, the senses push us to sense gratification. The mind pushes us to sense gratification. Therefore, we must embrace the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and whatever we're doing, whether we're cleaning a floor, whether we're decorating the deities, whether we're cooking a preparation, whether we're going out in Sankirtan, whether we're managing, whatever we're doing, we should do it with the thought to do it as nicely as possible, so that when others come in contact, they will become attracted. When others come and see how clean this place is, they'll want to stay. They won't want to go. This is preaching. It means everyone in the Sankirtan movement is a preacher, or should be a preacher, by mentality, by consciousness. Then we will taste nectar, and then we will stop looking at each other from a distance and wondering, well, maybe didn't work last time, but maybe this time it did. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna. I'll take one question, or anyway, two, or if there are any. If there aren't any, that means maybe I did something right. He's saying at the time of death, all your life flashes before your eyes, and therefore you get a choice. And so the devotees don't remember or remember their sinful activities, and what will happen. Like I said in the middle of the lecture, we shouldn't take one verse and make it a rule for everybody on all circumstances at all times. If you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, you don't need to go through that. That all your life go through the, you'll be with Krishna. And like Narada Muni, what happened was his change of body came like a lightning flash and the effulgence of a lightning flash. They're completely connected. They just happen instantaneously. So the point is the same point I made in the class. We should absorb ourselves in Krishna and in Krishna consciousness and stop our sinful activities. And Krishna will help us. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. If you do that, if you try to do that sincerely, then He will help you. And He will be there at the end. And even if you do have to see all those things, they won't become attractive to you. The bad things. Okay, I gotta go now. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveda Bhaktabinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.